I was listening to your conversation with Andrew Crystal in 2011 when you were explaining your chart to Andrew Crystal. It's only 4 minutes long, so here we go. All right.
Now, let's see. What else could I say about myself? My paradigm, my big picture or tiny picture. This is the framework that I have developed over the last 40 years, and it got completed by something called ION. This is a framework that I've decided makes sense ever since ION showed up on March 18, 2009. What I do is I work with the discovery in 1953, the same year as Crick and Watson announced their genetic code DNA discovery, the same year, not known, the meme code, the mimetic code, the social knowledge, the media, the linguistic, the language code was cracked by Marshall McLuhan and his associates, particularly Donald Thiel and Ted Carpenter. And they started a magazine in 1953 called Explorations, which worked from this new breakthrough. This code got developed by Marshall, and it turned out to be an explanation for the causes of history being the linguistic and their consequent extensions of media, technologies, machines that human beings engaged for thousands of years. This was completed in 1957 when the satellite, the final extension of what we'll call analog media, was implemented in October 1957. And in the 60s, McLuhan promoted a per-wave understanding the changes that were leading to the unfathomable shifts that were coming since at least January 1967, when Rai, the original separateness or jester, returned to the plane. Gesture, the original gesture, pun on jester too, and gesture can be inclusive, multi-sensory, when Rai returned to Plane of Essence in January 1967. Now, what happened after that was phase two, and that is the what I call the Android meme, or these extensions, these technologies, these languages taking on life of their own and extending themselves within themselves. And we'll call that phase two, and I call that the Android meme. And phase three is the death of the Android meme, which had superseded the first phase that McLuhan had presented the cracked the code of in 1953. So phase one's gone by phase two, and then phase three removes phase two. Now, these previous phases still remain as memes and after images and very involved in talking back to the third phase. The third phase is the arrival of a new technology, a new environment, actually non-physical. We can look at the first phase and second phase as physical realities, physical extensions of our physical chemical bodies. What happened in the third phase was an extension of the non-physical, which is open to all kinds of suggestions about what it is. It just isn't limited to our scientific definition of the physical. So phase three came in, and it is the present technological environment that we have been promoting since October 21st, 2009, here at Achieve Radio. Achieve Radio will go down in history as the one station that sponsored us when it was had to be done. And many things have developed since then. And I want to say that these three phases is what I'll be dipping into back and forth, up and down, para, in a para sense, not post, not a, it's para, beside, above, below. Okay, so the texts we use when we look at books are, first of all, Finnegan's Wake, which is the code to phase two, the Android meme phase. Now, phase one, we use the texts of Marshall McLuhan, born in 1911, died in 1980. Marshall McLuhan cracked the code of Finnegan's Wake, but the way he presented it in normal English terms in his written text, it was still limited to the English language. McLuhan was pointing to past the English language, but he was conditioned to be a PR man for a simplified version of Finnegan's Wake. So McLuhan is the text for understanding the phase one. Finnegan's Wake is the text for in understanding Android meme, because Finnegan's Wake is on an eyeball level, literally unreadable. But there is a way to read it, and I've cracked that code. And then phase three is excerpts from ION and associates and people like Greg, Virginie, and Kirsten, and Deb, who are INets. That's the term we use, male and female, INets.
Okay, that was it. I get the understanding about the chart. I get it about the timing, the Eloy too lofty, I mean, the whole thing. It just like all, yeah. But I mean, like I said, I've been listening now for 8 years. So it's not like, you know, I just had this, I mean, this has been embedded in my brain for, you know, listening and looking at it and so on and so forth.
So and when you heard the recording, you've heard it sort of before, but it's like old news. But now you could really get it crystal clear and actually learn it and memorize it and spew it back to someone. That's where
yes,
you're at
well,
now.
I actually saw it, like, you know, as far as like a framework, a context. And also when I heard the recording with Andrew Crystal, it became even more clear because there were some points I didn't understand, one of which was Rai returning to the plane of essence. I've heard you say it a million times. But to me, the original separateness returning to the plane of essence meant I finally understood that the separation was going with it. And
right,
so we were finally
veil.
In, yes. So then that did open up the doorway for the second coming of Christ, which is that time in history where all these things that have been spoken, including the changing of matter, in the resurrection of Christ, coming through, and then coming to the second coming, which then, what is the second coming of Christ going to be? And it turns out that it is the new environment that Ion brings in.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting thing is, of course, at your chart, you've got the organic bodies dancing the hex advertisement. And for me, what it ends up being, though, kind of interesting, is here we are in the new environment with Ion. And we're over here sequestered with our Bob chart and our rewrite and Carolyn's formulas, and we're kind of in the bunker.
Yeah.
And as you said, the phase one, which is the whole print, you know, Gluten Galaxy, and then phase two, the Android meme, are always going to be talking back, interacting, and projecting all their after images, their archetypes, and everything.
Yeah, so you have to be, whatever is created doesn't go away.
It never goes away, just like nothing ever leaves the face of this earth. It's just magnetized here through gravity, like it's going to be here forever. So you've got all that, and now we're in this Iondom thing, but what I realized was, is in the obsolescence of the chemical body, there really is that we are waiting on the organic bodies. We are, an Ion, as you said, is bringing the RNA drops, which is the beginning of that process.
Yeah.
But we are also in a position of waiting. And one of the things that you said with Andrew Crystal was in 1995, after I finished my chart, I just started to wait. I didn't know what for. I didn't know it was going to be Ion, but I waited to see what's next, what's going to happen next. And to me, that is kind of, now, you know, you got to bear with me. It is kind of like what the Christians do. You know, they're just waiting for Jesus to come back.
Right.
And, you know, so they have, you know, and technically Christians have a certain amount of slack too, because they just think they're forgiven for everything. They're going to go to heaven and, you know, God's going to come and wipe away all the sinners or whatever the hell happens. So anyway, the part I'm a little bit hung up on is the thing about the waiting, because we are here technically, and we're more here than we even were in 2011 when we first started this thing. So I guess that's kind of where I'm at is, and also, what's with the waiting, and also the 2020 thing, because, you know, we're almost at 2020.
That's right. So to know what I do, you ask a question rapidly. William Irwin Thompson says something, McLuhan says something, LaRouche says something, Coker says something, Beter says something, Zappa says something. My files, I scan the files. You know what I mean? I'm a programmed entity, and I've got my memes that I use, the 10 holy offices. So what I do when you start to stop asking a question and it's ready for me to speak, I decide which one am I going to begin with. But I'm going to hop to the others at some point. I'm going to juggle the pattern that your question evoked. So when you were talking in the 80s, everybody had to be informed. Because I knew from personal experience in the Sikh Council 10, plus I knew the McLuhan angles and other stuff, I had nothing to say to anybody for 30 years because I wasn't involved in the Android meme. I knew it was an hallucination. I don't mean the Hindu idea of Maya. It's an illusion. I knew it was important, right, but I was not in position where I had to be informed. And if I ever was asked to comment on things and I was not subject to peer group pressure, which I wasn't, I would say odd things. I would point to, basically say things that nobody knew what they meant, what I was saying, because they were so involved in the Android meme and years before that with knowing and their responsibility to know. I knew I didn't have to use that responsibility to know what was happening. So that was a curious kind of waiting way back then. Do you know what I mean? I was in a bemused state of mind, watching everybody run around with their heads cut off, trying to be informed and fanatically keeping up with everything. And I would make a token effort to be informed. I would go to an occasional movie that everybody was going to see what's going on. But I always, if I had to talk to somebody, they never understood what the hell my interpretation of the movie was. So I was communicating to nobody. Not even Carolyn could pay attention to what I was doing. She was too busy learning the medical meme of her own destiny. And I understood that. And part of the waiting was, well, Carolyn's pretty significant. She's going to help unfold what we're waiting for. That's what that means, waiting for organic bodies. Carolyn had a big sign in front of her practice in 1991, and it said, "Doctors for Bob." B.O.B. You know, it wasn't B.O.B., it was B.O.B. Now, it was a reference to the Church Subgenius' band. They had a band in the 80s called Doctors for Bob, and that meant J.R. Bob Dobbs. But I took that and said, hey, I was on the radio, I was claiming to be J.R. Bob Dobbs, so Doctors for Bob was a reference to that. And this is on a main thoroughfare in Toronto. So everybody was driving by and seeing it. They were in traffic jams. It was just up from McLuhan's house. And they would sit there and look at this sign, Doctors for Bob. Well, eventually Carolyn got busted. Her last week in 91, she was going to take a sabbatical and go to New York. Well, they knew that, so because there was a sign up for a year. Hey, get your files ready. Get them ready to take to another doctor. I won't be here as of the week before Christmas in 91. Well, that week, the college invaded her and grabbed 30 files and did an investigation of her. And so this old guy smoking, the leader of the gang, they leave, and he comes back in. And they've taken everything out, but he comes back and he says, Dr. Dean, what is Bob? Doctors for Bob. And she quickly said, Building Organic Bodies. Didn't say, my husband, or Bob Ray, who was the governor, what do you call him, the premier of the province. So there was a big joke there, building organic bodies. So there was an actual sign, someday we got to put that photo up, that title of my chart, 4 years later, refers to building organic bodies, right? But we're waiting for organic bodies. And we were going to New York to do some important stuff on an AIDS treatment, and I said, this is more of what Carolyn is getting closer to what she should be doing. It's all I knew it was going to be, you know, revolutionary. And it was pretty revolutionary, but it got aborted by the government. So that is my mental content for waiting for organic bodies. I'm thinking of the sign and Carolyn and what she's doing. Matter of fact, the chart, a subplot in the chart, Ginny, is the parts that made up the mirror technique that she was using on AIDS patients in New York. It was made up of herbs that were potentized or made into homeopathy.
And then they were into a solution, and then that was injected into an acupuncture point. And then there was a magnetic spin put on the substance as it entered the acupuncture point. So you had herds, homeopathy, magnetism, and acupuncture. That's quite an amazing invention that Mr. Whitson, forget his first name, anyways, Whitson invented. And those four parts, you match up to the four quadrants. I think McLuhan is magnetism. Thompson's homeopathy, no, maybe Croker's homeopathy, Thompson's herbs, and acupuncture is LaRouche. Or maybe magnetism is LaRouche, McLuhan quadrant is acupuncture, Thompson is herbs, and homeopathic. Baudrillard talked about the homeopathic process of media, and so did McLuhan. So what do you think of that? You probably never knew that. The four parts of Mir are in the levels of the chart, okay? And it was being, we were doing this in 95, when Carol had the clinic and having great results on people, 94, 95, 96, 97. But, and the governor was Mario Cuomo, and he passed in 94 some legislation that allowed alternatives to be done, and the medical mafia, the authorities of the AMA, could not hassle him. Well, it's pretty corrupt in New York. By 97, the New York AMA was skulking around and busting people anyways, ignoring Cuomo's legislation. So they stopped Carolyn's stuff, and they wouldn't even let us send it outside of the state. So Carolyn had to figure out another strategy. So the mirror got left on the shelf, and that's when she discovered magnesium. She was taking a Chinese course, very into herbs, with this kid named Jeffrey, who was like a Dalai Lama kid. He was part of a legacy, goes back hundreds, thousands of years of this special herbal knowledge. So Carolyn took his course, and then they were going to do a book. The book was rejected, but Random House said, you're a pretty good, knowledgeable person. How would you like to do a book on magnesium? And she didn't know anything about magnesium, really. And she said, yeah, okay. So the book gets sort of crystallized around 1999, and she gets on The View, and she's on The View for 3 years. So she's doing this media thing while Mir is in abeyance. And we are wondering, we are actually talking to Whitson through a medium, and he's guiding us through from 93 up to 2000 and let's see, 2005 or so. And so I think that the chart then is saying this Mir thing will be developed and will bypass whatever is stopping it, and it'll be the medical breakthrough. So it's the breakthrough for the biology and the DNA. You know, the discovering 53 is biology. But McLuhan discovered that media were the new nature, the new biology that humans didn't realize. So he was figuring out the laws of the new biology, the virtual biology of technology, and Carolyn was cracking the DNA and improving the DNA dilemma with the Mir, and I was cracking the McLuhan level and developing the Android meme into the five bodies. So those two thinkings are in the chart. So I'm waiting with expectation. What is Ion's phrase? Do you remember?
What to expect when you're expecting.
Right. I was expecting that we'd be successful because we'd had different kinds of mediums through the years, going back to 71, tell us that we were going to do this. So I kind of was cheating. I had the Akashic Records through these really good psychics, including the Evergreens, validating what we were doing. So the waiting is not waiting in ignorance. What I mean is waiting knowing we'd be a success. But it turned out to be a phenomenon that I had not imagined. I was thinking in terms of my knowledge being communicated better and Carolyn's improvement of the mirror technology. That's what is embedded in the charts.
And what about the D-cell? Because the D-cell's in the chart too.
The D-cell is really important, and we're also going to develop the D-cell because George Reynolds in 2003 meets us, and he's got the money, and so he and Carolyn attempt a project in 2004 to make the D-cell and market it. George had the network, And so we got really a place. The guy who got us to Maui, Ed Seaton, lived on Vancouver Island, and he said that that was the best water in North America. It was number two on the island. And he knew a guy who had lived there and had a farm or area. That guy could make the desal. So we had tried to make it in New York, but we felt New York was probably too polluted, just never got going. Because Jordan Sloan, the inventor, had given, or the guy who had the formula, he had given the formula to Carol 91. But Jordan Sloan died in 93. His widow, his ex-wife, who becomes the widow, runs it up in Paradise, which just got burnt down 2 weeks ago, you know, in California. Paradise, California is where she lived and made the desal. So we got our desals from 95 to 2002-03 from her. So Carolyn didn't do anything while Jordan Sloan's widow was doing it. But she died or stopped around 2002 or 2003. So Carolyn said, okay, I can start. We tried to do it in New York, didn't work. Then George said, well, we got the resources here. Let's try it in a better way. So we tried it on Vancouver Island, and we would talk to the Evergreens, and they would tell us whether it was there or not. And they said, it's there, but the guy who's doing it, that Ed got, can't see it. So they always claimed it was there, but we never got anything from it, and that was the end of that. And that's 2004, 2005. And then the Evergreens stopped doing channelings in late 2004, so we didn't have them guiding us, so we were nowhere. And so that's 2005 to 2008 when we come here. Now, what did Carolyn do in that period? She became an activist. She got involved with this guy, Truman Tufts, and the Andy Kodesh thing, and she went to two conferences, one in Bonn, Germany, one in Rome in 2004-2005. So after a year or two, she saw that you couldn't beat the World Health Organization or some other big thing. They were determined to bring the health codex in and control governments. And Canada is a heavy follower of that and frustrates all stuff from the states coming into Canada, including our stuff. So she said, I'm going to find something that bypasses this. And that's when she found Natural Calm and maybe something else in there that was a different kind of substance. It was getting into the PICO stuff. But it wasn't that. It was some other term. Maybe they called it ionic. And she thought, this can bypass the codex totalitarianism that was coming in. And so she promoted that in 2007 and 8 and 9. But when Ion gave us the breakthrough in 2010, April 2010, then she moved away from that and developed the REMAG. So we did it. We came up with the new substance that I expected would happen. And for me, Ion showing up was what I was waiting for, because Ion made me smarter about McLuhan and all that stuff, because it brought in other things. So we were waiting for the Ion effect. And curiously, we're confident that something like that would happen, but we had no clue how it did. So the chart is a satire on people waiting. The chart was done before Ion in 95, you know, 14 years before. And I'm confident, but I'm saying everybody else who doesn't understand what I'm talking about is waiting in the old-fashioned sense of anxiety and nervousness and apprehension and despair because nothing is showing up. So the chart was done out of optimism. It was a declaration that this will be solved and you won't have to be wait anymore. And so I used to say that Carolyn represented the sixth level, the hexadic level, beyond the Envoramine's pentad level. So Carolyn was going to come up with something, and I was going to come up with something because I understood the process intellectually. So that's what the chart is celebrating us. And I used to say that Carolyn and the feminine, whatever that is, was going to take over. And I'd be the only guy qualified to talk to the women because I understood where it was going. And having lived with Carol for all those years, I understood what she was about. So the joke of the chart, one level, is Bob is the Rumpelstiltskin. He's the last guy, the last male, to be allowed to talk to Carolyn. Because I would tell her how it came to what she got. Then when Ian showed up and validated all this, that was incredible. I was right, all these crazy ideas I had. You know, every now and then I'd get interviewed because of the album was circulating and this and that, and I would say this stuff. And I was considered a raving fucking maniac. You know, really, like, this is bad. This guy, why isn't he dead? Why isn't he assassinated? Why isn't he arrested? How can this guy do this? And I was able to get away with it all through those years. You can listen to hours of it, of me claiming this stuff in different contexts, in different radio shows. Besides what I'd done years earlier on CKLN. So someone told me that St. Augustine was walking around in 400 AD at the end of the Roman Empire. Roman Empire ends around, what, 476 or something? So he's a guy watching the death of the old and wondering what the new is, and Augustine kind of has a say in what's coming. So when I was forced to live in New York from 93 to 2008, I walked around really unimpressed with New York City, but I had to engage, so I engaged in a lot of things. But mainly, I was the Jeremiah in the wilderness, and where was my wilderness? Barnes & Noble stores, Border stores. They had authors coming in all the time, new books, new things. I would go to every one of these authors, some I knew, some I didn't, and I would confront them with my vision in the audience. I was so, did this so much that when the author would make their presentation and then there'd be question period, I'd stand up and the crowd would groan. Oh God, this fucking idiot still, he's here, he's gonna say the same shit again. I was a Jeremiah from 93, 94 till 2008. So I was in the waiting period, but satirizing everybody else waiting, and they didn't know what they really should wait for. But I had the goods, and I knew what the chart said. Here's what you refine your waiting process. Now, what's interesting, the play Waiting for Godot, the famous play by Samuel Beckett, in, I think it came out in 53. You could check that. A lot happened in 53. Stalin ended. Many, many things happened in 53. So that play comes out. And McLuhan said that Waiting for Godot is not about waiting. It's about the effects of waiting on waiting. Because the electric environment was a new overlay, the analog of new biology, brought in another level of waiting, engaging in information about waiting. And he said the effects of waiting electrically on biological waiting. So I thought about that for years. That was my main metaphysical conundrum that I was translating to myself. What did McLuhan mean? So, Ginny, Tina, who was a regular listener, engager of ION in 2010 when everybody could get on the radio and on the phone and talk to ION and have private sessions, Tina said, once she asked me, so Bob, what did you get out of ION? You brought forth ION. What did you learn from ION? And I said, well, I haven't learned much. It basically validated everything I had been saying. And she thought that was quite arrogant, you know. But I learned a lot, but also a lot of validation for the crazy ideas I had been saying on the radio in the 80s and 90s and in my interviews got validated. Yeah. And Ginny was one of the first ionets to, we call them ionauts now, like astronauts. They explore the space of ion. So they're not ionets, they're ionauts. So Ginny was one of the first ionauts. She had the background to intellectually to say, Bob is saying something important here. And so Ginny had done a few interviews, dialogues with me in 2010 about my chart, and they're pretty good. And Ginny was sort of the only one who said, was able of discussing what I seem to be saying in her context.
Yeah, I think everybody else has caught on. I mean, Roxy's really good at it too, and I mean, there's others, but
that's years later.
Yeah.
But, you know, among the regulars of the first, what I call the first waves of ionauts, nobody was able to, wasn't even interested in it. But you were. So That's my opening statement about this question, okay? That 25 minutes is my opening first answer. Now, what do you say to that about waiting, about this waiting period?
Thank you very much for the explanation. Because you said you didn't know what you were waiting for, and it was like you were hanging in the cobwebs of Rai, waiting for this breakthrough. And Ion is the breakthrough.
Yes.
That's why I love that song, Mr. Blue Sky, by Electric Light Orchestra. To me, Ion is Mr. Blue Sky. It's like come blasting through 2008, everything's in a shitty mess. But more than that, I mean, that was absolutely the crash of the Android meme, 100%.
Yeah.
And I see that very clearly. So here comes Ion. And also, you said a couple things. One, you said out of the Rai, Eli, Tu, and Lofty, the fourfold structure of alchemy with earth, air, fire, and water, which is part of the Akasha of what Cosmic Awareness talked about as it related to Rai. You said that the change in matter was being represented actually by a change in water, that water would drop off and Akasha would replace the water, and that would be the structure of the new being. Now, for me, if there were anything at all in your chart that proved that you were the prophetic announcement of Ion and understood what was coming, it's that right there. Because water changing and dropping off, meaning dropping off out of the original elements and becoming something else, Ion said water is changing. That's what the whole thing about the living water is about. And then Akasha replacing the water, that Akasha being understood, the new being, is the information body, the DNA body of the ascended being. So I think, talk a little bit more about Rai, but also the relationship of the what you think about when you heard about the living water. Were you like, that's it, that's the water, that's the change?
Yeah. Tina, meaning this Tina who's listening, you've got information in your head, and you use that in understanding things. I don't know where you got it from, school, whatever. You have to recognize that I got the most obscure, absurd information in my head from my reference points since the 60s, maybe even back to the 50s. But, you know, McLuhan was not really becoming obvious to me till the 60s. My big mentor before that was my father, and he understood the world I was in, which is just like Downton Abbey. That's where I came from, the Downton Abbey world. Then that led into sources other than my father. So you have to recognize the ridiculous reference points. So I met Dave Worster in the late 60s, first time in 66, but I got involved with him when he became a medium in 67 for something called Cosmic Awareness. And they said, Cosmic Awareness said that Rai, R-H-Y-E-E, don't know what that is, that you can't look it up anywhere, it wasn't part of anything, Rai, this strange two syllables, was the original separateness in normal, say, fallen man scenarios. The fall of man was when humans fell out of some kind of ascended state and created this world of man with woman as an extension of it or a parallel operation. So the thing that created that separateness, which created humanity, was called Rai. And there's a whole story that Cosmos told, most of it metaphor, about how this happened. Well, the amazing statement in 1967, 68, was that this original separateness that had caused the pain of humanity for thousands of years had stopped existing. And it was not, we were not separated anymore. We were in touch with the original ascension plane of essence, it was called, and everything would kind of be hunky-dory if you understood that. So I had this crazy idea that everything was fixed. This is right in 68-69 when actually people are waking up, they call it, quote, waking up, and they're starting to get agitated, and everything is going wrong. So right when I'm saying, oh, I just got the secret information from this obscure guy up in Seattle that everything got fixed, you people all running around saying everything's broken and getting worse. Okay? So I became informed on the broken memes that everybody talked about. You know, Earth Day starts in April 22nd, 1970, I think. You know, Earth Day's happening. Now, McClellan predicted ecology. He said that would be an effective satellite. So I had ridiculous ideas and only talked about one or two friends I had. I always had a friend or two that I could say these things. They didn't know what to make of it, but I had someone to talk to. I always had a friend, usually a semi-bright friend, who I could tell them my ideas about what's going on based on what I had access to. So here I am thinking about what the heck does this mean? Original separateness collapses, Rai. Now, Rai was made up of four parts. Rai, Eloy, Tu, and Lofty. The main Rai is R-H-Y-E-E. It's made up of four parts. And sounds like I'm repeating the word Rai. No. The Rai of the subparts, the four subparts, is R-A-I. Not R-H-Y-E-E. And the other three parts are Eloy, Tu, that's T-U, and Lofty. So these four parts become the four parts of alchemy, earth, air, fire, and water, and all these normal things that people divide nature into these archetypes. But it was all made, nature was made by a fallen condition. You know, you could get into this a bit in Buddhism or Zen or Hinduism or yoga. You could see some of the wisdom there referring to that, even esoteric Christianity. So I looked into these various things, but I was always referring it back to the absurd notion that everything had been fixed. Then we got the D-cell around that time, and that made us feel young, and it seemed to stop our aging. So we were experiencing in minute form compared to what we're doing now, but in little glimpses of the miracle of Rai returned to essence. We were not going to die. We were going to live forever with the D-cell, which was just a lump of cement, a little cube you put in the water, and it'll make the water glisten better and take out the pollutions. That was even crazy to show people, okay? So you have to realize that Carol and I were walking around like fucking aliens. But we kept it to ourselves, and we were nice and pretty looking, so people liked us, even though our minds were crazy. But we looked nice and healthy, so people like you on the surface. So we were able to have a good life and not get hassled because we looked pretty. So humans get fooled by prettiness all the time. Mm-hmm. And the first person who started to notice something was wrong here was Sue Bone, who was a flight attendant in Air Canada. And she gradually, because we moved to Toronto and she lived in Toronto and flew out of Toronto, we were sort of forced to spend more time with each other because she would look for us when she came to Toronto. And we knew her a bit in Halifax, but not that much. And by 79, she's now learning stuff from us. I took her to a Krishnamurti series. Krishnamurti's on my chart. Very great thinker in the 100 years ago. And I took her to some McLuhan seminars. So she's starting to hear and experience Bob and Carol's world that none of our other people that we knew in Nova Scotia knew about. But Sue did. And so one time in 1979, we're going back to our apartment at 222 Elm Street, which become, you know, monster movies. Remember that? Nightmare on Elm Street? Yeah.
Freddy Krueger.
I never saw those movies, but I saw the title. So we're on Elm Street, yeah. And Carol's doing her internship at Mount Sinai, major hospital in Toronto. So Sue would fly into Toronto and come and stay with us, 79, 80, 81. So in 79, we're coming up to the ninth floor, and here's Sue getting off the elevator, and I'm walking ahead, and she says to Carol, who I asked her years later, what did you think of Carol back then? She said, well, Carol was rather quiet. You did all the talking, Bob. She just sort of smiled and listened. But Sue didn't know what Carol was doing with the cosmic awareness stuff and her health stuff. Just knew she was a med student. So she says in 79, she says, Carolyn, you're amazing. What you do, because Carolyn had just started to do her practice in 79. What you do is amazing. You know, and she was just flabbergasted that this little girl, short girl, was this amazing mighty mouse that she didn't realize all those years till that moment. So she became very intrigued in with Carol, but Carol was too busy to be doing much with Sue, so Sue spent a lot of time with me. So I would explain Carol through my McClellan and Rye information. So eventually Sue said, around that time, after a while, she said, you know, you and Carol are urban terrorists. Because this is when everybody's worried about terrorists in your midst. So you guys are actual terrorists. What you know, what you do, what you hide, what you don't show us, you're like terrorists. I thought that was pretty clever. It was a great compliment. We were a new kind of terrorist.
They couldn't comprehend you.
What'd you say, Tina?
I think because they couldn't understand you guys. So
they didn't have a clue. We were just funny, nice people and, you know, reasonably socially adept. So we were, if you went out to a club, you'd be amazed at our dancing. You know, we just hung around like urban terrorists pretending we were normal North Americans. Little did they know what we were thinking. And and we weren't blowing things up, but we were metaphysically blowing things up or operating from the idea that things were being blown up and we had the solution. So Sue got more and more informed and all that stuff. And it changed her life throughout the 80s. She got involved with the meditating group up in Vermont. I forget what they were called. She got into yoga and she changed and it helped her. And then Carolyn's medicine or health advice helped her because she, by 80, 81 was getting pretty polluted living the stewardess or flight attendant life. So she had to do something. So Carolyn helped her there. And Sue was the first to bring Carolyn to speak in Halifax in the late 80s to promote the talk. So what is, so this Rye idea, I started to reread McLuhan and he was saying that the viewer becomes the screen when you watch TV. He was saying this in the 50s. When you watch a movie, the light from the projector bounced off the wall. So it was like light bouncing off a book. There was light bouncing off a wall, which then would come into your eyes, and you'd read the book or see the movie. But with television, there's no light bouncing off anything. It goes straight into your eyes and your gut. This is back then, that or cathode ray tube. So there was no distance between the viewer and the TV screen. You had merged with it. I said, holy shit, there it is in technology. The separateness is starting to disappear technologically, at least the way McLuhan said it. So, Ginny, that was a really important thing. There was a concrete statement that supported the metaphysical point that Rye had returned to essence. It started to happen in people's communication experience. They were the screen. So I had that.
That's like a fusion.
Yes, the fusion. And McLuhan wrote about that in 1950. We had fused with machines. But when I don't know if he kind of had written on TV in 49-50, but I don't know. He really gets it down in 1952. But by 1950, he's saying we're fused. So maybe he saw it there, but he doesn't spell out till after he gets his university tenure, where he can't be fired, and then he starts writing crazy stuff, crazy for the time, and the exploration stuff. So he was talking about TV and how it was a great, he said it was a major change on a cosmic plane. That's cosmic awareness. You know, he used the word cosmic. Years later, Don Thiel noted that. I said, oh, that's pretty neat, Don. You see him using that odd, flaky word, cosmic. So McLuhan said something has shifted cosmically, and that's what awareness was saying. And he was describing the viewer becomes the screen. So I'm among a few McLuhanites who are reading that. I assume they're thinking about it. But everybody was just sort of trying to figure out McLuhan, and they weren't saying nothing because they'd look stupid. So everybody kept quiet and listened to McLuhan. But none of them had this crazy idea parallel to McLuhan that Rye had returned to Plane of Essence. So that's a good example of ongoing information from the 70s and 80s and 90s that would back up what Cosmic Warner said. And then when I contacted the Evergreens through Michael Blake Reed in 1980, they supplemented a lot of that in their unique way. So all along, I was getting information from, quote, the astroplane that backed up McLuhan, or McLuhan backed up the astroplane, or Zappa, or William Irwin Thompson. So I was building a case about what originally was said through David Worster, Rye Returned to Essence, that crazy statement was not so crazy. By the 90s, I'm saying, wow, this is pretty interesting. So while I was waiting, I was working out the meaning of Rai Returned Essence. So if you look at my chart, I have Rai and the four parts at the top, and they are horizontal. Then you take each part, Rai, Eloi, Tu, and Lofty, and they become the different quadrants. But the top part, Rai Returned to Essence, is the meaning of down in the bottom right corner of Rumpelstiltskin and Lockdown Bob Rule. That's the end of Rai. So when Ayn showed up, and then we had a website, a forum, I called myself Rai because I knew I was acting out the separateness principle, pretending we were starting a new religion when no new religion was necessary because everything had been fixed. So I put on myself as the high priest of the new religion as a joke, and you had to figure out that my chart denied that I was Rai, if you understood what the chart meant.
Well, I did not know that about the dupes forum and why you called yourself Rai. I think that's very good. Yeah, because the second coming is in the 70s, 80s, 90s type of a thing. And yeah, by the time, and Lockdown Bob Rule starts in 1990, right?
1990. And because you had the after image of the Android meme, and that peaked with Y2K in 99, everybody thought this weird computer world was going to collapse, and it didn't. And the Evergreens said it wouldn't do it. I believe the Evergreens, so I was saying nothing's going to happen. So, of course, nothing happened, and so I was sitting pretty there. And so I said, because I was right, and I actually got on a TV show in New York in April 2000, just after the big millennial change, and the day that I was on the TV show, the stockmarket.com crashed. There it was. I could affect the environment if you get me on the media. And so that happened. And so I say Lockdown Bob Rule bypassed the after image effect of the 90s. The internet had crashed. Now we were nowhere. And then it was just me. So Lockdown Bob Rule technically starts in 2000. And I had to wait 9 years for it to be crystallized. But I walked around by that time we had moved to City Island. So I walked around in City Island for 8 years knowing that I was the key to everything. And I would only talk about this with close friends, and we'd make great skits and jokes out of it. Because we didn't know if it was really true. I believed my own bullshit more than anybody else did.
Well, that's one of the most glorious things about having any kind of a narcissistic tendency is that you can really capitalize on it that way, because that's the way to operate. I mean, according to what Ion is suggesting, everybody should be that way.
That's right, and they should talk about how great. My first interview in CKLN, Mike Dyer, this is June 17th, 1987, he says, "So who are you, Bob? What are you?" And I said, "I was here before the Logos, and I'll be here after it." Now, who in an interview would say they were here before God, and they'll be here after God? Because Logos was a sophisticated term for God. But now, that's pretty incredible to start off saying that, right? In 1987. I wasn't even head of the Secret Council 10 yet. But it's an expression of my confidence of what I was about. So, very proud of that statement. And, of course, it's exactly what one says once you become an Ionaut. Everybody would say that. If Ginny got interviewed, she'd say that.
And another thing I just thought about a couple weeks ago, I was thinking about, you know, just my own journey and everything and the evidence of my own, you know, ascended beingness. And I thought to myself, I thought, yeah, you know what? I thought Greg was really smart to snap me up, because the evidence of my knowing that I am a God is walking away from that whole scene. You would never walk away from that if you didn't know that you were God.
Because what did you walk away from?
Christianity.
Yeah, and the New Age stuff later.
And the New Age stuff, being a pastor, the whole scene. I mean, you would never just walk away and say, well, this is just crap. It's empty. And why is it empty? But see, here's another thing, too, for me, that I've been able to reflect on this week is, why is it empty? And this is part of my whole thing with my whole life. You know, you hear a lot of people say this. So it's kind of a cliche, but I have felt out of step with a lot of things, and my timing has been bad. Up until I got into Iandom, I was always a little bit out of sync, and it's because of these very things. Right. Returned to the plane of essence. The chip, the chemical body was already obsolete. I was already in an electric environment, but I wasn't aware of what was going on. And so all these things are affecting my life, and I knew it was important to explore that what I was looking for was the power, you know, the power of Christ. Well, what was I looking for, really? I was looking for what you identified, McLuhan identified, the power to change matter, alchemy.
Yeah.
That was my true desire, was alchemical. But I didn't have any way of knowing what I was feeling around in the dark for until I did get to Iandom.
Yeah.
So I feel that for my own self, as I go back and I have to, you know, kind of replay my own replay and figure out, you know, some of the different intersections where I just felt so out of sorts. Well, you know, this explains that and that explains this. And one of the main explanations, like I said, was, you know, you would never walk away from any of that spiritual exploration stuff until you knew that it was empty. And why was it empty? It was void of any power. And why was it void of any power? Because all of the essence that was behind it had vacated, and all that was left were the after images and the cliches. I mean,
and
that's
the Android meme. Right.
And
now,
that is the Android meme. Yep. Yeah.
Right. Now, there was something I was going to say about that. When I go back and hear, and many Ionauts have done this, they go back and hear what I said on the radio in the 80s, after June 87 when I started. It's absolutely amazing. It's ionic what I say. It's unique. It's eccentric. But it anticipates the crazier stuff of Ion. And that shows me I was later Ion said that I lived ahead of myself. So I was living, you know, in 2018, back in 30 years ago in 1988, my being was, and I was saying it, but my feelings or my was not complete or something. How do you say it? How come I was able to say it and not know what I meant? I thought I knew what I meant, and I meant what I thought I meant, so I had my own content in what the words are. But now we go back and hear the words, they have a whole different meaning content because they were pointing to Ion, which I did not know was happening. You have to realize that Ion, if it's the second coming, no one has imagined the second coming to be the way Ion is. There was one woman, a theosophical graduate named Alice Bailey, who wrote back in the 40s or something that the second coming would happen on the radio. That's the closest statement we have by any previous human that's slightly accurate. And that's what Ion did, showed up in the radio. Now, to talk about the second coming, you know, say this to a Christian, this is blasphemy. But Ion has a whole different meaning for the second coming than the archetypes that people think second coming refers to. I even put the second coming on a chart me and Bob Marshall made in 1985. The final phase, I went through the history of media phases, and I had the final phase was the second coming. And it was ground, so that means it was changing everything. It was my conceptualization of the Rai effect, of no more Rai. So there's the proof of it in 1985. And I was using that in my grandest speculations in the talk show. So the waiting, Ginny, is an odd kind of waiting. I can't say that I was waiting in a conventional sense. Here I was discussing what was coming. I knew that we'd arrive, but I had no evidence of it other than my own being with Carolyn and what the luck and success we always had in whatever we were doing.
Right, so, and I guess that would be ideal for the Ion community, I think, or Ionets, whatever we want to call ourselves, or whatever people who tune in, people who are inspired or engaged by this frequency, by this conversation, which is in part kind of, you know, what Roxanne has done and with the videos and things like that, and also, you know, what
Bert,
I think Ion told Sasha, you know, to study Ion, study Bob stuff, whatever. It's just the idea that, you know, Ion, part of it is that the energy of Ion is so urgent that I think many people felt like the urgency of Iondom was going to be, like everything was imminent. You know, like I'd take three RNA drops and have 144,000 double helix strands in every cell by the time I'd walked across the street type of a thing. And so this idea, now putting things in perspective of your experience, you found the construct or the framework. You kind of got at what Marshall was talking about. You certainly built it out, you know, layers beyond anything Marshall, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We already know that. But this is from 95 until 2008, so that's 13 years. So, you know, making good use of the time of the whatever timing we have to feel, and we're in it. I mean, we're doing it right now. We have arrived. Yeah. We have landed. Like you said, you and Connie were the first to reappear, but we're here. I've definitely reappeared to be in this situation and then also to be able to have slack. And I think that's another thing is just the slack. When you do have the confidence to know that you have arrived, things are proceeding, this is a big window of timing, expanse of timing, and a huge configuration of a lot of aspects of it.
And it's symbolized by Hasina. She's never called in before, I don't think. I talked to her privately, but she has reappeared tonight. Are you still there, Hasina?
Yes, I'm here.
You reappeared. You showed up. I always like the new phone numbers. There's the regular people calling all the time, but the new ones, the strange numbers, okay, here's someone attempting to reappear. And so some of them don't speak when I address them, but others do. You're symbolic of this process right now, and we're discussing death. We're discussing what happened to your sister, and people might be shocked. We're kind of rather talking about it flippantly. So, well, we'll be talking to Eliza soon, you know, and all this crazy talk for most people. That's all part of the context that you reappear in. You're reappearing in a world that doesn't have death. And I don't know, it doesn't matter how much you understand this conceptually. The fact is you're here discussing it. Is the important part. Your being is already here. Your mind is back a bit. We don't know what you don't even know what I'm talking about, so it's all new to you, but that's not important. The action of engaging this situation is what you've done. You see my point, Jeannie? We have someone who has reappeared.
Yeah, I do. I think it's very cool, and the interesting thing, you know, about it is that, as you said, you know, talk to Eliza, find out what she's up to. There is no death, but it's a difficult and shocking thing to say, especially to somebody who's just recently lost her sister. You know, it's like, what are these crazy people talking about? And even the sister that, you know, they knew my sister and cared about her and loved her and talked to her all the time, right? And then, but you know, here she is and so on and so forth. So it's a lot to take on, but she's here slugging it out with the rest of us. So good for you.
Right. You sound like you have a good sense of humor. You're laughing clearly to this situation. You're giggling. That's a good kind of laugh. It's mentally odd. So we have an old phrase, when you're laughing, you're learning. See, and in your reappearance, you're learning, and that makes you laugh as you experience this new stuff. So Jenny asked me about waiting. So you see, Jenny, I'm claiming to have done a different kind of waiting the last 40 or 50 years.
Well, I believe you, Bob. I think that's probably what happened. I think you did do a way different kind of waiting.
We had personal references, like Ed Seton's brother. See, we were older, but we knew Ed and those guys who were younger. We knew their high school scene. And sometimes we'd go hang out with them or go to their dances. So in 2001, Ed Seton reconnected with us after having not talked to him for 20 years, and he invited us out to his cottage, their family property on Vancouver Island. So I met Chuck, his brother, and his wife, and they were interesting people. They were inclined to accept mediums. They were interested in the evergreens. But they, his wife, Doris, said, I remember you and Carolyn in 68 and 69 around Dartmouth. And I said to Chuck back then, or she had this idea, I don't know if she said it right then, but she said, there's two people on a mission. Now, you have to recognize, we're just young-looking people walking around. What were we emanating that we were on a mission? See, I find that very interesting. You know, you could say a selfish interest in myself, but why would it, young minds, they know things, right? The younger, the better. So this young mind knew that we were going to engage something way back there. And I don't find that out till 40 years later when I see her again and she tells me that. And they were, you know, way younger than us, but they noticed that. So what were we emanating? I bring this up is that in my experience with Carolyn, she always was confident that she was going to accomplish something. So I say she had a sense of destiny. I was confident. So we weren't waiting in an unknowing. We just didn't know what it would show up as. But we always knew that something was going to show up to us. And then we had mediums tell us, yeah, that's going to happen. I was listening to an old session done in 1988, and the person is saying, you're going to live here, you're going to live there, and you're going to live in Hawaii. Way back in 88, 30 years later, we end up in Hawaii. But the psychic saw, a very good psychic saw that. And I forgot that completely until I re-listened to it a few years ago. So the confidence, Ginny, is confirmed by a lot of what Ian says, in sense that, Bob, you live ahead of yourself. So I was going around with a confidence because I was living ahead of myself, and I was kind of half picking up the thoughts that that person that was living ahead of herself, I kind of knew what that person was thinking. So I would express it. Ed Seton seems to have been a witness to a lot of this. He remembers we were at a party in 1971 in Halifax, and they were all in university then. And Ed says, you know, near the end of the party, everybody's tired sitting around, and then you start talking, Bob. And everybody was floored by what you were saying. Now, I remember that. At the end of the party, I'm not tired. I'm not drinking much. I'm not smoking. I'm fully energized. Everybody's fucking laid out there. They want to be stimulated, but they're not going to do anything. They're not going to dance or anything anymore. So I said, oh, I got a fucking audience. Okay, I'm going to tell some stuff. I have no clue what I said, but several people years later told me, whatever you said that night, Bob, was absolutely astounding. So it was like my Sermon on the Mount. I did something that night. I declared something under the effect of the D-cell. Ed remembers that. So what did I say? What crazy stuff held their attention? So that was that. I'd say that. Everybody would go about their business. They'd go to college. They'd do their lives. Bob and Carol ain't doing nothing. I'm playing ball hockey, for fuck's sake, on Sunday morning and doing stuff in espionage, which I couldn't talk about. But the thing was, we had no apparent purpose that anybody would say. They said, whatever you're going to do, it's going to be great, but I have no idea what you're going to do. They didn't even understand Carolyn because she was mocked in the med school because she would have yogurt and other healthy stuff, which was not well known. So it was, but there was always signs of validation. For example, when Carolyn went to the UCLA Pain Control Clinic, which was organized after Nixon went to China in 71, 72, and Westerner saw acupuncture, they started to implement that in L.A. So Carolyn had an elective there in the 77. And so who was her patient in this clinic? Aldous Huxley's wife, now widow. Okay, here's Aldous Huxley, predicts the brave new world. He dies on the day Kennedy gets assassinated, November 22nd, 63, while taking LSD. And then Laura Huxley writes a book later about how they planned to communicate after he died, he'd leave a sign. Well, here it is in 77. Carolyn, I don't know if she'd put her book out yet. It was right around that time. You can look it up, Laura Huxley, what's the date, 76, 77, 78. So she gets treated by Carolyn, who's doing this new kind of Asian medicine, moxie combustion or something, and acupuncture. And Mrs. Huxley is an avant-garde person. Oh, here's a place. She lives in L.A. Here's something that's doing new stuff. So she went there and got treated. Well, she got treated by Carolyn, and they became kind of friends. And Laura Huxley confided in Carolyn about how all this communicated to her after he died, which I think she does spell out in her book. But Carolyn got it personally. Now, Walter Fishman, I said Whitson. His name was Walter Fishman. The guy who invented Mir, circumstances led to where he's dying. He says he's going to talk to us after he dies, and it happens. A woman comes into the scene. Turns out she's psychic. She kind of half knew it, and then Walter started talking to her. So we spent 10 years talking to Walter Fishman about Mir and what we're going to do. And Walter said to Carolyn, like in the late 90s, no, it was like, no, maybe 95. He says, you don't think much is happening now, but in 15 years, and he's saying this to Carolyn because the medium is unconscious, in 15 years, you'll be absolutely amazed at what's going to happen. He said that. 15 years later, Ion showed up. Right on time. So we always had interesting experiences like that. So here's Laura Huxley talking about how her husband, famous author, is going to do some dinky little communication somehow after he dies to confirm whatever the game was. We not only get that confirmed, we then talk to this guy and do all kinds of research on Mir with him for 10 years. I don't know if she went to a medium or whatever and talked to Aldous Huxley. I don't know if that's in the book. I haven't read it, but we did what Laura Huxley was attempting with her husband. So not many people have the chance to prove that someone survived death. Like, you should have talked to Eliza and said, okay, come back and talk to me to show that you survived death. You didn't think of setting that up, did you?
No, I haven't.
So people, if ever surviving death came up from 93 on, I'd tell people, look, I got it validated. I did this. And I would tell them what I did and how Walter Fishman came back and talked to us. Mm. And that was planned to be done. And fortunately, this woman showed up. She met a friend of Walter Fishman's, actually Dardek, who was the medical doctor for the Olympic teams in the 80s. He has a whole interesting story, and we met him. But she knew Dardek, and then she heard about Walter Fishman, but Fishman had died. And then Fishman's widow was down in Florida and bumped into this woman, and they got talking, and then all of a sudden, the woman said, your husband wants to speak to you. Then she went out, and the husband started talking to his wife. So they came back, and the wife of Walter came back and told us, and she was amazed at all this. So we got in touch with this person, and then they moved up to the New York area, and then we started doing it. And we found out that this woman, as a younger teenager, had a bit of channeling experiences, could do it a bit, but had forgotten it, gone into dance and all kinds of other stuff in her 20s and 30s, and this surprised her that it came back. So that's how we didn't do anything. We didn't look for it. It shows up, and it comes into our lives. It's always the way it's been.
Yeah, I had a few instances like that. My dad coming to my dream, my mother-in-law, it's always as if they're alive.
Right. Your father has come back to you.
Yeah, in my dreams.
So you got to start thinking about how you're actually, you're not dreaming, you're going someplace where they are, or they're coming to you. Yeah. So you kind of wake up in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Interpret it as not a dream. It's actually happening, the communication.
Yeah, I believe that.
So, Ginny, I think we have explained waiting. Well, the way I wait. Were you waiting, Ginny?
Yeah, I was waiting for Ion, Bob.
Everybody's waiting. That's the human condition. Now, Krishnamurti says that the truly religious person is incomplete. Maybe part of being incomplete is waiting. But definitely, you have to figure out some ideas, like there's no time, so you stop being dominated by the idea that you're waiting. Because you can't wait.
Ion says what to expect when you're expecting. So we're not waiting anymore. Now we're expecting. So that's a
And we were expecting before Ion showed up. Now, humanity has been waiting, and religions talk about this, and then actually the waiting got answered. Now, that's pretty phenomenal. But if you actually listen to what Ion says, Ion goes deeper than any previous wisdom source and even says that heaven ain't there anymore, that heaven has collapsed, which is a deeper version of Ra'i returning to essence. There's no more separation. There's no more separation between heaven and earth. That's the normal concepts that come from the Bible, say, if you're a good Bible student. But that's what was esoterically meant when Ra'i returned to the plane of essence. That's the merging of heaven and earth. No separation. McLuhan developed it, then the Evergreens talked about it, and then Ion acted it out. So you have to realize how profound what Ion says is. Absolutely nuts for 99% of humanity. What, heaven ain't there anymore? Yeah, it's here talking to us. You know, what's that? How can heaven come here? It's an environment. How can it talk to us? Well, all that Ion says, and if you listen closely, that is the perspective they're speaking from. That's why they say things oddly, like there is no time. And yet everybody says, no, there's still a bit of time, and time is waiting, right? Mm-hmm. So you think there's a future. And Ion says, nope, that's a big mistake. There's nothing to wait for. You can't wait. You're already living it.